And now, our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents North America's Forgotten Past by W. Michael Gear and Kathleen O'Neill Gear. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Gregory Gorton, Christopher Graybill, Margie Tompros, Alyssa Wilmoth, Colleen Delaney, Julianne Elliott, Nick DePinto, Yasmin Toison, Danny Gavigan, James Konacek, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Michael John Casey, Tim Getman, Lily Beacon, Terrence Aselford, Christopher Sheeran, Kimberly Gilbert, Richard Rowan, Thomas Keegan, Alexander Strain, Anastasia Wilson, Tim Carlin, Johan Detweiler, Larissa Gallagher, Joe Brack, Thomas Penny, James Lewis, Nathaniel Perry, Elizabeth Jernigan, and Michael Glenn. Book 4, People of the River, Part 3.
The clouds that sailed westward over Badger Tail's camp gleamed with a rusty hue. From where he stood, leaning against the rock, he could see all the way to the Father Water. The wind had picked up, stirring the blossom-laden branches that formed the green canopy over his head. Badger Tail forced himself to work on his stiletto, made from the foreleg of a white-tailed deer. The needle-sharp point had a tendency to dull quickly when it didn't outright break in the process of being withdrawn from a victim. He was eager to be away from this sanctuary. At first, it had been a shield against the enemy, but now the tall rocks hemmed him in like a cage. Worse, not even the dogwood blossoms could keep away the odor of death that blew down from Redweed Village when the wind changed. Wolves had growled and fought there all night, tearing the bloating corpses to pieces. Nor had the hot sun brought any relief, for with the day had come the shrill cries of vultures. Badger Tail clamped his eyes shut and shook his head. The whole world rang with the sounds of death. Badger Tail's dreams had been haunted, filled with images of Nightshade. The feel of his arms around her had stirred feelings he'd thought his body had long forgotten. His gaze lifted to where Locust knelt, playing a game of dice with Flute. She had been the only woman in his dreams for over 20 cycles. Guilt filled him. Dressed in a thin war shirt made of woven bulrush threads, the curves of her perfectly toned body riveted Badger Tail's attention. Like all vigilant warriors, she had tied her war club to her belt, just in case, though her bow and quiver leaned beside her rolled blanket next to the closest rock. She had washed her hair and left it loose to dry. Sable curls caressed her ears.
Stop it. You can't control your dreams.
They had been so vivid. He'd awakened himself several times in the night, always after a bout of desperate lovemaking with Nightshade. They'd been happy, laughing while they chased each other through juniper and pinyon pine forests in the Forbidden Lands. No war tore the countryside in his dreams. He drew his stiletto tip across the piece of sandstone, honing it back to a lethal point. Around the camp, groups of warriors sat sharing pipes or white drink, while others slept in preparation for the long night march ahead. At dusk, not long now, they would angle northward to join forces with Black Birch, Woodchuck, Elkhorn, and the other war party leaders just south of Bladdernut Village. Then, day after tomorrow, they would start the sweep southward to challenge Pataga. Badgertail's skin crawled at the thought.
The fires in the south have begun to die down, but what does that mean? Has Pataga taken out his rage on everyone who wouldn't join him? Is he even now positioning his forces to repel my attack? Of course he is.
No matter how carefully Badgertail's war parties had clung to the drainages, someone would have made a mistake by now. Pataga would know that Badgertail was on the move in the north and would be making preparations for their eventual clash. Almost none of the scouts Badgertail had sent out had returned. That fact nagged at him like a festering wound.
Have they been killed? If so, Pataga dispatched scouting parties long before I left Cahokia. Why would he do that? Fear of the villagers whose homes he destroyed? Or knowledge that Theron has taken dramatic action? Too many things don't fit.
He looked over at Wanderer and Vol, who still sat with their backs propped against an eroded rock. Vol had braced her forehead on her drawn-up knees to sleep. Wanderer gazed around the camp with remarkable mildness, given his circumstances. As Badgertail studied that thin, expressive face with its mop of gray hair, the old shaman turned to look directly at him. Badgertail gazed for a long time into those faded brown eyes, then strode through the weave of shadows to stand over his captive.
Is there something you need, Badgertail?
Yes, if you don't mind. I was wondering if you knew whether or not Hailcloud is in charge of Pataga's forces.
Wanderer nonchalantly picked dried mud from his red shirt and dropped the bits at his side. With his hands bound, the effort was awkward at best.
Oh, I would think so. I doubt there's anyone in the world Pataga trusts as much. And Hailcloud's loyalty is certainly beyond question. Crossedbeak told me that Hailcloud himself strangled Pataga's mother.
Crossedbeak? Is this some relation of Pataga's?
No, Pataga isn't related to any ravens that I know of, so I suppose he's not related to Crossedbeak either.
Crossedbeak is a raven?
Last time I talked to him, yes. But you know, these things change. Did I tell you I was having trouble with a weasel? It all started when I was pack rat and stuck my nose into the den.
Wanderer, you don't doubt that Hailcloud is leading Pataga's warriors?
Not at all.
Badgertail folded his arms and hugged himself. His feelings of friendship for Hailcloud had grown over the cycles, as well as his respect and admiration. Hailcloud had an unnatural ability to second-guess his enemy's war plans. 10 cycles ago, they had been on a battle walk in the south, working together to reopen a closed trade route. When Hailcloud had suddenly refused to take his warriors any farther, Badgertail had demanded reasons and was told only that Hailcloud sensed something amiss. Badgertail, angry, had finally agreed to send out scouts, and the scouts had surprised the enemy in a narrow defile where they had set up an ambush. 3 had lived to make it back to camp and shout a warning. Hailcloud's battle sense had saved Badgertail hundreds of warriors that day. Badgertail didn't want to think about how many it would cost him over the next week. And surely Hailcloud's battle sense had been responsible for what had happened at River Mounds, too. Nightshade had not been there to foresee their attack, so it must have been Hailcloud who had roused the village and gotten it ready.
Ah, blessed maiden! Ah!
Badgertail shifted to watch the dice game. Flute shook the decorated bits of clay in a hollow cane container, then threw them out across the dirt. Locust clapped a hand to her forehead when the warriors around her grinned and collected bets. Vol woke at the noise. Badgertail could tell only because her shoulder muscles tightened. She kept her head down, pretending to sleep.
Wanderer, where are Pataga's forces? Do you know?
Don't you know?
No.
You're the war leader, Badgertail. What makes you think I would know when you don't?
I was hoping you'd dreamed something. You are, after all, a greatly renowned shaman. I'm a warrior.
Dreams aren't the province of shamans alone, Badger Tail. Why, Spider and Weasel are far greater dreamers than most humans. Did you know that?
Wanderer, do you always answer a question with a question?
Don't be silly. What would make you think that?
Badger Tail irritably focused on the sky over the weathered rocks. The molten ball of the sun perched low on the western horizon. Streaks of scarlet light shot out from the fiery fringe, puncturing the deepening blue. All seemed quiet, peaceful. Shadows lengthened across the floodplain in the distance, sending charcoal fingers over the edges of every hollow. Badger Tail returned his gaze to Wanderer and found the old man staring back at him. Their eyes met like the clash of war clubs. Then, just as suddenly, Wanderer's eyes regained their amiable lunacy.
You know, Wanderer, cycles ago, I used to wonder how much of your curious behavior was feigned and how much was real. You know what conclusion I came to?
No. What?
I decided that you are the consummate trickster, better than coyote or deer at circling and trotting back over your tracks to confuse your hunter.
Badger Tail, do you think I'm being dishonest with you?
Are you? I suspect that you'd do anything to mislead me about the Stone Wolf and Hail Cloud.
Well, then why would you ask me about them?
I was hoping that I could send you back to the Sun Chief with a message saying you had helped us. The Sun Chief might show you greater leniency.
Really? Well, that would be surprising, given that leniency isn't one of Theron's more noticeable attributes. Besides, you're forgetting that Theron has always loathed me. Even as a boy, he used to sneak up to poke me in embarrassing places with sharp objects. I doubt that he'd show much reluctance to do the same thing now. Since he's grown into an adult, I'm sure that his toys, as well as his aim, have gotten more lethal.
Badger Tail recalled what Theron had done to poor Shagbark with his hand spike. And there had been other times when he'd been called to the temple to help remove the bodies of luckless servants.
Wanderer, do you...
Badger Tail!
An arrow smacked the rock behind Badger Tail. He dove for the ground, rolling and coming up with his war club clutched in his fist. The rocks came alive with racing men and women scrambling for their bows. Badger Tail could see enemy warriors sprinting in from every direction, shooting as they ran. 50, 60, more. And Badger Tail had barely 45 left.
Southwind, take 10 people, climb the rocks, guard the south side of camp. Flute, you take the north.
Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Locust whirl and drop into a crouch as she brought up her bow, aiming over Badger Tail's head. A man toppled from the jagged rocks, landing on top of Badger Tail in a bloody heap. Badger Tail shoved the corpse aside and crawled for his own bow and quiver. Arrows fell around him. Warriors collapsed, thrashing where they'd sprawled in the dust. Blood surged in Badger Tail's ears. He slung his quiver over his shoulder and grabbed up his bow. Rolling onto his back, he knocked an arrow while he scanned every possible entry. To his left, Parsnip and Groundsel scaled the rocks to shoot down on their attackers. One enemy warrior materialized, vaulting a maze of wounded and dying to leap into the camp. The warrior wheeled and stumbled backward, clawing at the shaft of Badger Tail's arrow that protruded from his belly. Southwind and his people had wedged themselves between stone slabs to guard the south side.
They're coming! There must be 100!
Badger Tail hit the ground on his stomach, slithering until he reached the tumbled stone on the western side of camp. Slinging his bow over his shoulder, he scrambled up the rocks until he could look down over the creek. Coming up the drainage bottom, in the same way that his own people had ambushed Redweed Village, 20 warriors were splashing through the thin film of water.
How did they get through? They must have killed the guards I posted as lookouts.
The enemy war party charged Badger Tail's camp, shooting into the midst of fleeing warriors and swinging their war clubs for close combat. They came in wave after wave, 10 at a time, throwing themselves against the stone fortress. A glint of black caught Badger Tail's eye, and he whirled in time to see a man moving through the rocks behind Locust.
Locust, get down!
She dove for cover as Badger Tail fired.
There are too many. Run! Break into groups of five and get out of here. Let's make them split their forces if they're going to hunt us. Flute, go first. We'll try to cover you.
Flute tapped four people as he sprinted by, and they followed him through a break in the rocks, then raced down into the creek bottom. Other parties of five began escaping the onslaught.
Everybody, go! Go on, get out of here!
Badger Tail climbed higher into the rocks to peer out across the floodplain. And the sight that met his eyes made the muscles knot in the pit of his stomach. His warriors retreated in a choking cloud of dust, stumbling through the charred remains of Redweed Village while they fired at the irregular lines of people who followed. But the wounded near the camp kept fighting, drenched in sweat and covered with blood. Locust crouched alone in the eastern rocks. Blood soaked her shoulder and sleeve. Badgertail couldn't tell if she'd been hit or if the blood was someone else's.
Badgertail! Hillcloud has split his people to chase ours. There's an opening to the southwest. Take it!
Not without you. Come on!
Badgertail jumped down to the ground and ran for her. Locust fired a final arrow and sprinted to meet him halfway. They dashed past the place where Wanderer and Vol had sat earlier, leaped over the scattered contents of two packs, and burst out onto the open plain. If they could just get across the creek and into the tall stands of sunflowers and giant ragweed, they might be able to crawl their way to freedom.
Badgertail! Help! Help me!
He spun to see Southwind, half staggering, half running, behind them. Blood drenched the hand he pressed tightly to his side. Dark, crimson blood. Gut blood. Badgertail slapped Locust on the shoulder.
Get across the creek. I'll join you as soon as I can.
He started back, but Locust caught him by the arm and swung him around.
Don't be a fool. Southwind is dead on his feet. His body just doesn't know it yet. Look at the color of that blood. I won't let you sacrifice yourself to—
Maybe it's not as bad as it looks.
Stop lying to yourself. You've seen too many wounds not to realize—
I can't leave him. They'll mutilate any of us they catch alive.
Mutilation is nothing. Do you know what they'll do if they catch you? The great Badgertail? The man who murdered their families and destroyed their homes? They'll make the torture last for days. They won't let you die until you've told them every detail of our battle plan. You'll betray the entire—
Badgertail jerked free of her grip.
Go! I'll meet you.
Then he was running back, winding around clumps of wild roses to reach Southwind. The stocky warrior tottered into Badgertail's arms. Putting his right arm around Southwind's waist, Badgertail hauled him over the edge of the creek. Father Sun dipped lower in the sky. They stood a chance, maybe, if they could find a place to hide until darkness.
Southwind, wrap your arm around my shoulders.
Southwind tried to, but Badgertail had to take the warrior's hand and slide it across his back before quickly beginning to climb up the steeply eroded bank. Dirt sloughed off beneath their thrashing feet, forcing them to work twice as hard. They had almost reached the top when Southwind sagged against Badgertail.
Sorry. Can't. Sorry.
Southwind's fingers clutched at Badgertail's shoulder, as weakly as a newborn's, while he sank to his knees in the glittering sand.
Southwind? Southwind, hold on to me.
Can't. I shouldn't have called. Sorry.
Come on. You can do it. Come on, live!
Badgertail lifted Southwind in his arms and climbed over the lip of the creek, where he laid him down in a tall, aromatic bed of golden ragwort. The yellow flowers stood 6 hands tall, high enough to cloak them temporarily. Badgertail moved Southwind's hand away from his side so he could get a look at the injury. He felt his stomach rise into his throat. The enemy warrior must have used the chert studs on his war club like a saw to carve such a deep wound. The gash extended from just under Southwind's ribs down to his groin. Gray intestines wormed through the opening, green-brown and oozing where they had been ruptured. The stench forced Badgertail to turn his head. Southwind blinked lazily at the purple-rimmed clouds that hovered overhead, as if his vision had started to fade.
I didn't know how bad. Sorry. Badgertail, leave. No use.
Badgertail flattened himself in the weeds. Through the fragrant curtain of flowers, he spied warriors flitting past the shadow-dappled stone slabs. The tallest of the warriors stepped into a patch of wan sunlight, and Badgertail involuntarily dug his fingers into the sand.
Hillcloud, is that warrior beside him Basswood? Probably.
Badgertail concentrated on stilling his frantic breathing so he could hear their quiet words.
He says no, but he's still checking the dead.
How many did we lose?
19. But they easily lost 30. Boltine is still pursuing those who fled. If he can catch them before it gets dark, no one will be alive to report our location.
Badgertail braced his forehead on his fist. A sick dread gripped him.
30? What is Hellcloud doing so far north? Did he know that I'd make a play for the northern villages and convince Pataga to move his warriors up?
Hail Cloud trotted out of the rocks and shielded his eyes, gazing southward. Two warriors were dragging Locust up from the creek bed. Horror numbed Badger Tail. She fought wildly, kicking, wrenching against her iron-fisted grip.
Locust! She was waiting for me.
Badger Tail's gut twisted as he watched the warriors haul Locust toward the rocks where Hail Cloud waited. Vol started squirming for cover when the battle exploded and men and women went wild, careening for weapons, scrambling up the rocks to spy on their attackers, shooting back in desperation. Wanderer landed beside her with sweat beating on his nose.
This way, Vol. Follow me.
Do you know where you're going?
I certainly do. Away from here.
Wanderer half slithered, half crawled through a narrow opening between the slabs to get out onto the grassy plain. Vol followed him, her blistered leg hurting unbearably. Tattooed warriors raced everywhere, their beaded forelocks glinting as they ran. Lavender light fell in a woolly blur across the fields of sunflowers, thistle, and grass. Her hands tied, Vol crawled clumsily. Wanderer's frantic feet kicked dirt into her face, forcing her to turn her head. A few hands away, she saw a dead warrior sprawled on his stomach, an arrow protruding from his back. He watched her with wide, sightless eyes.
Wait! Wanderer!
She lunged for the knife on the man's belt, pulling it out with her teeth before whirling to drop it in front of Wanderer's nose.
Hurry! Cut me loose!
She extended her hands. When Wanderer had sawed the rope enough that she could pull it apart, Vol jerked her hands free, snatched the knife from his hand and cut his bonds, then tucked the knife in her belt. Her eyes darted from warriors who sprinted in from the south to those who scrambled up out of the creek bed.
Which way? Where can we go that they won't...
This way!
Wanderer got down on his stomach and slid through the wilted grass a hand at a time, going so slowly that it seemed to take forever to get beyond the fighting. Ahead lay the shade of taller plants.
Will you hurry up?
I don't think that's wise, Bull. The only way Snail stays hidden from Bluebird is by moving slowly. I learned that when I had Bluebird sold. He was always annoyed by the stealth of Snail. We one time...
Tell me later, Wanderer. Move!
They'll see us if I go too fast, Vol. That's what I was trying to tell you. We ate a lot of flies and mosquitoes when Bluebird and I were together because their glittering wings attracted our attention. But Snails only rarely.
A rush of warriors swerved around the rocks in pursuit of several of Badger Tail's retreating men. They shot arrows as they vaulted brush.
Blessed Father, Son, they're coming right at us!
Wanderer changed course, angling sharply to the left into a dense growth of thistles. The thorns slashed at Vol's arms and face as she followed. She hoped that the evening had grown murky enough to hide them. Though the sun had sunk below the horizon, its brightness lingered on the hilltops in luminous smudges of gray. The warriors approached. Vol held her breath. They sprinted by, one pounding past within six hands of her prone body.
Let's get out of here!
No!
Wanderer flung his arm across her back and flattened her on the ground. Vol stared at him in shock. His wide eyes were fixed on the rocks, where a stocky warrior was dragging out a youth of no more than 14 summers. Four men and one woman followed, swinging deadly war clubs. The stocky warrior threw the youth into the dirt about 30 hands from where Vol and Wanderer lay hidden.
Where's Badger Tail? Tell me, boy, is he here?
I don't know, I swear. I haven't seen him.
You're lying.
No, truly, I...
We haven't time for this. Kill him, then search every inch of the brush. I want Badger Tail.
The stocky warrior strode away, heading back toward the rocks. The five warriors fell on the youth with their clubs, first bashing his spine, then beating his head until his face was a spongy mass of red. Soon after they trotted away, another warrior sprinted by and slammed his club into the dead boy's skull. Sickness churned in Vol's stomach. Hail Cloud organized a group of his warriors to search for wounded enemies. They fanned out in a long line and began beating the brush beyond the body, killing anyone who still breathed. As the darkness deepened, the heat of the battle died down, and warriors trotted back to the stone slabs to regroup. Wanderer nudged Vol with his elbow.
Now, let's go. But we have to crawl. If we stand up, they'll be all over us.
They crawled out of the thistles, heading in an easterly direction. As the evening coolness settled on the land, mist rose from the ponds, twining phantom arms into the twilight sky. The somber shadows of rocks and brush melted under the deepening blanket of darkness, smoothing until they pooled with the night, the croaking of the frogs, and the hum of insect wings. Lycan lay curled on her side in the entrance of the cave, her head pillowed on her arm, her back to the small fire she had built in the rear. The wood she had gathered at dawn had been damp with dew, and it smoked badly, forcing her to stay near the opening of the cave so she could breathe.
Oh, Wanderer, where are you? Will no one ever come looking for me?
She had been watching the trails from sunup to sunset, but no one had walked them. She had witnessed the entire battle, and had cried when the screams of the dying rang with ghostly resonance from the hills.
What's happening out there, Wolfslayer? Is the whole world going to die in this war?
To the north, vultures soared above Redweed Village, their black shapes flapping against the gray, sickly sky. The brief battle had forced them to retreat to their hidden perches, but they had returned, dozens of them. Lycan had barely slept in the past 2 days for watching the birds and listening to their squawks while they feasted on her friends.
Mother, are you alive?
Lycan tucked her green hem around her toes. Every time she thought about her parents, a chill swelled in her chest and tingled in her hands and feet. The cave did not help. Its oblong womb of darkness was no wider than 2 of her body lengths and a little taller. Cold seeped in from the rocks. Her teeth had chattered all of last night. She was tired, so very tired. It took great effort to stay awake, to keep watch on the trails.
Birdman, 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 help me stay awake. I have to wait for Wanderer or my mother. They might not see me here. I have to stay awake.
Lycan fought the heaviness of her eyes, but weariness overcame her. Images danced on the back of her lids, flickering orange and blue as sleep numbed her body and coiled through her thoughts. Lycan scrambled up to stare at a little boy who squatted in the mouth of the cave. 2 black braids framed his oval face and glistening black eyes. He was younger than she, maybe 8 summers, and dressed in strange hides. The red face of wolf adorned his chest.
Who are you?
My name is Foxfire. Your spirit helper sent me. Come with me, Lycan. We haven't much time.
Where are we going?
On a dream walk. Just like warriors on battle walks, dreamers have to confront their enemies too. I'll take you. Hurry.
But Lycan couldn't move. She scrutinized the curious hides he wore. For all of their beauty, they were thick and mottled in a way she had never seen, as if they came from animals that didn't live in her world. Lycan cocked her head.
What kind of hides are those?
Mammoth. And this belt is horsehair.
What are those animals? I've never heard of them before.
Come with me, and you can see them if you'd like.
Foxfire ducked out of the cave and stood on the narrow lip of rock that overlooked the floodplain. Gingerly, Lycan followed and stood beside him beneath a vast, glittering bowl of stars. The road of light tied the heavens together with a broad band of white. Lycan frowned. Wolfpup had already galloped 2/3 of the way across the sky. It had grown so late without her knowing it.
Where do these mammoth and horse live?
Far away, and a long time ago. When the threads of the star web pulled apart, the world changed and they died.
You mean they're all gone?
Yes. Every time a dreamer fails, a part of the spiral dies.
Sadness filled Lycan. Her soul seemed to remember mammoth and horse, but dimly, like the recollection of birth buried deep inside every living creature.
If they're gone, how can we see them?
Spider will help us. The circles are coming full again, and you're going to need to see for yourself what happens when a dreamer gives up.
Foxfire extended his hand and blew across his palm. Strands of light shot from his fingertips, spreading across the darkness like a spider web iced in blue fire. Lycan gaped when he trotted out onto the swaying web.
Please, Lycan, we must hurry.
I'm coming.
Lycan tested the blue thread with the toe of her sandal before biting her lip and racing out after Foxfire. Vol woke. Rain drifted out of the night sky in a wind-borne mist. Drops spattered on the sunflowers that curtained the undercut hollow where she lay hidden. Soft, soothing. For a moment, she almost forgot her pain. But as she moved, seeking to draw up one knee, the agony returned.
Don't force yourself. Just rest for a while.
They had crawled in the underbrush for half the night, desperately dodging the warriors who ghosted through the darkness. Every patch of cat's claw and stinging nettle had scoured the blisters of her injured leg. Now she had to stifle whimpers whenever a blade of grass brushed her. Somewhere in the terror, her fever had begun. It burned bright inside her, leaving her weak and trembling while it seared her soul with its fire. Vol lifted her head so she could peer at her leg. Despite the poor light, she could see it, clotted with blood, dripping pus, and coated with dry leaves. Shreds of skin hung loose where the blisters had been torn. The sight sickened her. She would have to clean it soon, or evil spirits would smell the blood and come to feast. Then she would be in real trouble. As she eased her head back to her rock pillow, she noticed that Wanderer's tattered red shirt draped her shoulders, protecting her against the chill of the mist.
Where is he?
Her gaze roamed the hollow. Small and gray, the rock shelter spread about 20 hands by 10. The rounded overhang arched 30 hands over her head, protruding just enough to fend off the moisture. No more than an arm's length away, a ragged border of dampness darkened the soil. Vol looked out toward the field of sunflowers beyond the cliff face and saw Wanderer. He stood in only his breech clout, its attached array of power pouches dangling like cocoons around his waist. In the sky above him, a single cloud blotted the stars. The rest of the heavens shone crystal clear and beautiful.
Why would he be standing out in the rain? Don't be silly. That's just the sort of thing he'd do.
But surely fatigue weighed as heavily on him as it did on her. Probably more, since he was twice her age. As she watched, Wanderer tipped his chin to the mist. Water slicked his gray hair against his skull and reflected like an ethereal sheen from his starlit face. He spread his arms, hesitating like a hovering kestrel, then began the fluid motions of the Thunderbird dance.
Hi-ya, 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 ha.
His ribs stuck out as he swayed and spun, dipping his hands to stroke the earth before lifting them reverently to the sky. All the while, his outstretched fingers imitated the rhythmic sprinkling of rain. Wanderer danced harder, gyrating as he stamped his feet. Mud caked his sandals, leaving dry tracks in the moistened dirt. Power built. Each fluid lacing of his arms quickened it until the hair at the nape of Vol's neck crawled. When Wanderer began a prolonged spin, his head thrown back, his arms reaching straight up to Thunderbird, lightning flickered through the cloud, gently at first, as though Thunderbird had just awakened and blinked his eternal eyes. Then, abruptly, a lance of lightning split the darkness. From deep inside Vol, awe rose. She felt the same half-worship of Wanderer that she had when she'd loved him those many years ago. He had always been able to call lightning from the clouds, at least as long as he'd had a bird's soul, whether eagle, magpie, raven, or any of the others who had inhabited his body. She had asked him about it once. Wanderer had told her that all animals of flight, even flying squirrels, had a kinship to Thunderbird. Their calls, he said, resonated more clearly in Thunderbird's soul than the calls of other animals did, rousing him as though they were the muted echoes of his own sacred voice seeping up from the crevices of his thoughts. Vol studied Wanderer as he plodded along the base of the towering cliff. Bushes crowded every shadowed nook. He bent to fumble with the leaves of a scrawny plant, then moved on. He felt his way around the concave curve of the wall, prodding first one bush, then another.
There are warriors crawling all over the floodplain and bluff. Where can we go? We're trapped here. Who were the warriors who attacked Badgertail? Pataga's forces?
She had not recognized any of them. But the Moon Chief would have gathered hundreds by now, perhaps thousands. She couldn't know all of them.
So much is happening. And blessed Thunderbird, I'm tired.
She rubbed her eyes. Badgertail and Pataga had locked themselves in mortal combat, while the small villages lashed out with hit-and-run raids to steal supplies from the camps of the warriors. She had overheard Locust talking about it. A runner had come in from the north to announce that Oxbow Village had joined them, but he had complained bitterly of the traitorous stragglers who had abandoned their homes and taken up bows against both sides, creeping into camp at night, looting, and then fleeing in all directions before the lookouts could decide which thief to shoot at. Wanderer shoved a thorny rosebush sideways. His chert knife glinted, and the plant quaked.
What can he be cutting from the stems?
After about a finger of time, he straightened up and awkwardly fumbled with a handful of something. The rain cloud sailed eastward over the bluff, and the stars returned in a glittering canopy to illuminate the world. Vol saw Wanderer shiver, and guilt darted through her. Without his shirt, even the slightest breeze must prick his bones. He hurried, trotting around the bushes and jumping fallen rocks back to the hollow.
I thought maybe you'd left me for the wolves.
Have you seen any?
No.
Wanderer turned, smiled happily, and knelt to pile his handful of small round objects on the dirt near an old fire pit. The jagged edges of the rock ring scarcely thrust above the surface.
You were whimpering in your sleep, Vol. That's why I left. I thought maybe I could help.
Help?
Yes. You see, these bulbous growths come from the lower stems of rose bushes. When charred and crushed to powder, they take the pain from burns. It's lucky for us that so many rose bushes grow here.
Wanderer smiled faintly at her and rose to pull wood and dried leaves from the pack rat nest, clogging a hole in the corner. Using the pointed end of a piece of pack rat litter, he dug out the fire pit before arranging the leaves and wood just so. Then he reached for the fire sticks that he had made while she'd been asleep. For the dowel, Wanderer had stripped the bark from a straight hickory branch as long as his shin. Next, he had whittled one end to a point. The second piece of wood consisted of a section of oak into which he had gouged a round hole. This he now steadied on the ground with his feet and sprinkled punky material in the hole. Taking the pointed hickory dowel, he speared it into the punky stick on the floor and began spinning it as fast as he could between his palms. In no time, the friction had heated the punky wood to the point that it smoked. He quickly bent down and blew on it to bring the embers to glowing life. With great care, he then scraped them against the dry leaves and blew some more, gently coaxing until the tinder caught and he could start adding knots of grass and finally twigs and then wood.
Aren't you afraid that some warrior will see the glow?
No. I walked a long way out onto the floodplain to see how well concealed this hollow is. The sunflowers completely shroud us. If it were day, I'd worry because of the smoke. But not tonight. We'll be all right.
Wanderer carefully arranged the rose burls at the edges of the blaze and sat back on his haunches to watch their thin outer husks sizzle and wither. Exhaustion deepened the web of lines that covered his face. Sitting there like that, the flames dancing in his eyes, he looked very old and a little sad, like an ancient woman peering down curiously at her reflection in the water and trying desperately to recall the image that had gazed back at her 20 cycles before.
You're the only man, Raven, I know, who could dance with such energy after crawling on his belly half the night to escape people who wanted to kill him.
Really? I'd think anyone would want to dance after that, in sheer relief, if nothing else.
What is it, Wanderer?
I'm just thinking.
I could see that. About what?
Wondering if Badgertail survived. Wondering when you'll be well enough to travel.
Tomorrow?
She sat up suddenly, but her body mocked her by trembling under the strain. She hastily sank back down.
How's your leg?
Bad.
And your fever?
Getting worse.
I thought so. I doubt that you'll be able to travel for days, but I don't know how long we can stay here. If Badgertail is alive, he'll eventually have search parties combing the hills for us. He wants the wolf.
Wanderer gazed in the direction of Pumpkin Creek, his eyes going vacant, as if he had sent his raven soul flying to see what creatures skulked along the dark banks. That expression had always set Vol's gut to writhing.
Forget about us, Wanderer. I'm worried about Lycan.
Don't be. She's fine. Frightened, hungry, but fine.
How do you know? Did you dream something?
No, not a dream. She's been calling to me.
Calling?
Wanderer scooped the rose burls out of the fire onto the ground, where they rolled in tiny circles before settling down to smoke. Thin gray columns rose. He went to the edge of the hollow and picked up a flat piece of limestone. Bringing it back, he set it next to the fire and began to methodically crush each charred burl into paste.
I mean that her soul has grown powerful enough to make itself heard over long distances.
But how is she? What is she saying?
Vol found herself sitting bolt upright, the limestone hollow swimming nauseatingly around her. Her heart jammed against her ribs.
Vol? Oh no.
His face suddenly loomed large, and she felt strong hands grip her arms to halt her fall. Her head bounced limply. Slipping a cool hand behind her neck, Wanderer let her down easily and rearranged his red shirt over her shoulders. She hated it when anyone tried to take care of her. It made her feel weak and helpless. Feebly, she flailed at him.
Don't touch me.
I'll be glad to oblige, so long as you're not about to bash your brains out on a rock.
Lycan, tell me about Lycan. Where is she?
I don't know that, but she's been calling to me steadily. When she stops calling, then I'll panic. Vol, I have to wash your leg before I can apply the salve. It'll hurt. Can you stand it?
It has to be done soon. What's Lycan been saying to you?
Wanderer went out to the lip of the overhang and cupped his hands beneath a trickle of water. He carried the cool liquid back conscientiously and dribbled it down her leg. When the water touched her flesh, it was a river of fire. The more that Wanderer dribbled on her leg, the worse the pain grew, until she had to bury her face in the crook of her elbow to keep from weeping.
It's not the words I hear. It's more like the feathery touch of Lycan's soul against mine. Lycan is a very powerful dreamer, so as long as she stays undercover, she'll be safe. I think that by now she can probably sense when enemy warriors are near. All great dreamers can.
Vol stopped hearing his words. It took what seemed an eternity for him to wash her burns. She trembled while he gently dabbed the wet cloth to remove the grime that had melded with old blood. Every grain of sand he touched bit into her flesh like a poisoned talon. Only at the last, when he started applying the rose salve in cool globs, did she break down, in relief that it was almost over. Her shoulders shook traitorously. He stopped for a moment, his hand faltering in its work, and then he finished and stood. Vol refused to look up and let him see her tears.
Just go away, Wanderer. Don't shame me by asking anything ridiculous like how do I feel?
After a time, she felt a large hand, bony and uncertain, clumsily stroke her hair.
Try to sleep, Vol. I'll keep watch.
Around Lycan, brilliant stars twinkled like hoarfrost, while darkness flooded outward, rippling in the farthest reaches of the sky. Her skin gleamed blue-white in the eerie light. Foxfire stopped suddenly and pointed.
Do you see that, Lycan?
At the end of the blue strands they traveled, a forbidding wall of ice spread for as far as she could see. From its belly, water gushed out in a torrent, carrying gravel and sand down a broad channel that sliced through towering snow-choked mountains. Where the tortured river collided with rocks, water splashed in crystal sprays and froze into odd shapes. Foxfire trotted forward.
Wait! Where are we going? We can't get past that! Look at how high that wall is! Let me show you. Hurry, come this way.
Lycan followed him to a jagged crack suddenly visible in the wall. High over her head, sandwiched between two massive bastions of ice, there gleamed a clear patch of azure sky. Foxfire dropped to his knees and scrambled forward into utter darkness.
This is the way. Lycan, through here.
Lycan grabbed his hide sleeve and crawled through behind him. Blackness weighed down on her, heavy, taking her breath away while it pounded on her eardrums and pressed on her eyelids. Ahead, a tiny spot of light shone, growing larger as they neared it. Lycan stepped out onto a water-smoothed boulder. Strange scents caressed her nostrils, smells of moss and chokecherry steeped together for a thousand cycles.
Come, Lycan. It's just a little farther.
Foxfire clambered through the maze of boulders ahead until he reached a ridge where the sun blazed on his black braids. He tipped his face to the light and smiled in joy at the warmth that beat down on him.
Up here, Lycan. Let me show you what happens when a dreamer fails.
When she reached the top, she stared at the majestic land that spread before her. Herds of strange, long-horned animals dotted the rich plain, their ears and tails switching away flies while they inquisitively studied Lycan and Foxfire. Ice-capped mountains thrust up like teeth behind her, their ragged peaks raking the bottom of the clouds. To the south, hundreds of drainage channels zigzagged through a white maze of ridges. And there, their prey trapped against one of the snow-clad ridges, humans hunted. An enormous hairy animal with two tails thrashed wildly, flinging its front tail in mad arcs, trying to kill its attackers. Humans dodged and ran, using throwing sticks to launch long arrows into its sides. The animal made a feeble run to scatter the humans, but they just circled and kept throwing their arrows until the creature bristled with them as if a huge porcupine had been at it.
Where are we? This is the land of Mammoth and Horse. That two-tailed animal down there is an orphaned mammoth calf. It's the last mammoth alive. Humans killed its mother less than a moon ago. Now they're killing it.
It's the last of its kind? Why don't you stop them?
We tried to. When the spiral has been turned upside down, not all the dreamers in the One can set it right again. Only a living dreamer can do that. Power makes its choice and tries to hone the dreamer like a fine arrow point. But sometimes power loses the gamble.
Lycan squatted beside him, watching as the mammoth calf dropped to its knees. Even from this distance, she could see the blood that frothed and bubbled at the animal's mouth. The calf shoved itself up on trembling legs, but stumbled and fell, then flopped on its side in the snowfield. Humans gleefully hugged each other. As they cavorted, dancing, the mammoth calf's huge head sank into the drift, and the snow ran red with its blood.
How could they do that? Didn't they know it was the last mammoth alive?
No, but even if they had known, it wouldn't have made any difference. They wanted its meat. That's all they cared about. It happens when the spiral is knocked out of balance. Earthmaker created the universe to have equal portions. Pain and happiness, birth and death, heat and cold. That's why the spiral is so important. Its circles reach from the thinnest roots that dig into the ground to the perfect motions of the stars. Sometimes humans knock the spiral out of kilter. Sometimes animals do it. Every time a coyote runs through a flock of new lambs, killing for the sheer sport of it without ever eating its prey, the spiral tilts.
Tears blurred Lycan's eyes as she watched the hunters begin the laborious task of butchering Mammoth Calf. With sharp stone tools, they pulled back the hide, revealing muscles that quaked and jerked even as the blades carved.
You see that man on the far right? The one with the owl's face painted on his shirt?
Lycan wiped at her eyes and nodded. The man stood with his shoulders slumped forward, a hand braced on the head of a little girl who bounced joyfully up and down as she watched the piles of meat growing.
His name is Tusk Boy. Power placed all of its strength and hope in him. He had Owl as a spirit helper from the day of his birth. But in the end, when Power called him to enter the sea of Father Son's light so that he might learn the way to set the spiral straight again, he couldn't do it. He was afraid.
Afraid that the light would burn him?
Yes. Afraid that it would burn away his soul and there would be nothing left of him to return to his family. His wife and children meant more to Tusk Boy than Mammoth Calf did. Humans are like that. It's not their fault that they care more about themselves than everything else in the world. Earthmaker gave them that trait to help them survive. Only a few are willing to sacrifice themselves so that yellow butterflies may continue to flutter over the wildflowers in springtime. It's those few that power seeks out. But not even power can know for certain who will succeed and who will fail. No one really wants to be a dreamer, Lycan.
The grassy plains before her changed, glittering like a million gnat wings. White water boiled up from the ground through fissures in the rocks, then spilled down, filling a deep aquamarine pool where people sat around the edges, eating and talking. The chill breeze captured billows of fog and dragged them through the surrounding valley in long streamers. A young man sat alone on a rock, away from the rest.
I'm not the one. I'm no dreamer.
Who is he?
Wolf Dreamer. He succeeded. He dreamed humans into the spiral of this land, even though all he wanted out of life was to be a hunter and to raise a family with the woman he loved.
Power wouldn't let him?
He wouldn't let himself. The survival of his people was more important to him than his own wants. Without his dream, humans would never have found the way here.
So Wolf Dreamer understood that everything he wanted was nothing more than spark flies flitting in the darkness?
Foxfire methodically traced the face of Wolf that adorned his chest. His finger halted here and there, on eyes and snout.
Yes, but not until the very end. When he realized that all of the spiral was illusion, he knew in truth how much he loved my mother. Enough that he could let her go to find her happiness with another man.
Foxfire made a swirling motion with his hand, and the vision transformed. From the gold-spun rays of sunlight, the image of a man formed. He lay on a spire of rock that jutted up from a high mountain. Below him, to the west, there stretched a broad basin, and purple mountains rimmed the incredible vista. Blood oozed from the man's cracked lips when he opened his mouth to speak.
I can't be your dreamer. I can't leave Elkcharm or my girls. I love them too much.
The scent of smoke penetrated the vision. Lycan turned to gaze at Foxfire. His young face had taken on a bittersweet expression that melted her heart. His large eyes encompassed her soul.
No one wants to be a dreamer, Lycan. But can you be one? Are you willing to give up your soul? It means that you'll have to leave the safety of your cave and go to Nightshade at Cahokia. Alone. Unarmed.
But there are enemy warriors everywhere out there. I'm only 10 summers. I can't go by myself.
So was I. I was 10 when power called.
You were a dreamer?
Foxfire rose to his feet and stared down at her. The air wavered around him as heat wafted up from the rocks, blurring his body into bizarre, ominous shapes.
Yes. A very long time ago. It was as hard for me as it is for you, Lycan. But I learned that I had to give up all that I was to gain all that I was not. A dreamer needs to understand both before he can enter the light and learn what he needs to keep the spiral in balance. When I came back, I made 2 sacred power bundles. One of light, the wolf bundle that your people call the tortoise bundle, and one of dark, the raven bundle. It lives far to the east along the great shore. I took the last vestiges left by Raven Hunter and Wolf Dreamer and put them into the heart of the bundles. Opposites crossed, you see. Still, I was afraid.
How did you get over it?
I united the worlds in myself and became Feathered Serpent. He was my spirit helper.
Became?
Some dreamers are strengthened when they're consumed by fire, Lycan. Fire Dancer was. Other dreamers need water. White Ash did. Some, like us, have to drown in blood before they can unite the worlds in themselves. Don't fear it, Lycan. Those crushing jaws will give you falcon's wings.
What do you mean? I don't understand.
Lycan stumbled backward when Foxfire's legs began to writhe in a hideous dance. As she watched, they lengthened and twined into a snake's body with scales that shimmered a deep blue. Black feathers sprouted from the roots of his arms, stretching and spreading until monstrous wings blotted the sunlight. With wistful human eyes, he peered down at her.
Go to Colchia. Birdman waits for you there.
Lycan looked out at the starry night. Wolfpup hung in the middle of the sky, his snout pointed straight up as if scenting for danger. Lycan blinked. Something tiny fell from Wolfpup's paw. It spun gently through the darkness and settled on the lip of her cave. She crept forward over the cold stone floor to stare at it. The black feather glistened with a leaden brilliance in the starlight. Night hugged the land as Badgertail crawled through the tall cane fields that lined the southern meanders of Pumpkin Creek. The water should cover any sound of his movements, he hoped. Pale Cloud's lookouts roved the darkness. He had prepped past three of them in the last two hands of time.
Locust.
On the other side of the creek drainage, campfires gleamed boldly. He lifted his head to study them, and the moist wind drenched his face. The creek bank swarmed with blinking sparkflies. Badgertail squinted through the glittering mesh, counting the fires.
15 in all. Maybe 70 people.
He sank back to the cover of the cane.
Are you mad, Hailcloud? What are you doing lighting fires? Inviting my northern war parties to swoop down upon you? Or inviting me to rush into your arms in an attempt to save Locust?
Hailcloud was too shrewd a warrior to light fires with no thought of the possible outcome, unless he knew the precise location of Badgertail's war parties, and they were nowhere close, or unless he knew that the war parties had been neutralized. Pataga would have certainly sent runners to notify his war leader of such crucial information.
Or were the fires lit as some sort of lure to pull my parties out of the north? A decoy? That would mean Pataga had calculated the most advantageous point from which to ambush my forces and figured a way of getting all of them there.
Fear congealed in the pit of his stomach. Such maneuvering could be done through subtle ways, given a master strategist's hand.
Would Black Birch, Elkhorn, and the other experienced war leaders fall for it? Yes, they might.
Even he himself would have trouble in distinguishing between genuine hit-and-run raids and raids timed and arranged to lead several groups into a clever trap. Only good, swift runners relaying information to a central point could prevent such a disaster.
I've had but few runners come in.
The pieces began to fall into place.
How could you have let this happen?
Badgertail's gaze searched the black length of the eastern bluff before returning to the tangle of underbrush that surrounded him. If Pataga had set up an ambush, the best place for it would be somewhere around One Mound Village. There, the ravines and rocks provided ideal cover. But Badgertail would never make it in time to warn his warriors.
You walked right into Pataga's arms when you split your forces. Blessed First Woman.
He pulled out his deer-bone stiletto and clutched it tightly before he crept forward another 10 hands through the cane. One of the leaves caught in his war shirt. Badgertail stopped instantly, but not before he saw movement to his right.
Very carefully, throw out your weapon and show me your empty hand, or I'll shoot an arrow straight through you.
Badgertail swallowed down his dry throat and tossed out his stiletto. He raised his hands.
Good. Now stand up. I want to get a good look at you.
Slowly, Badgertail got to his feet. The campfires lit his face with an orange glow. He saw his foe rise from behind a bush and stand silhouetted against the sable cloak of night. Teeth glinted as the man edged closer. Maybe 21 or 22, he had shaved his head in the manner of a seasoned warrior. Shells hung from his braided forelocks, swaying with each cautious step he took. Fear was evident in the man's shallow breathing and in the way his arms shook while holding up his bow. He was tall, but gangly. Badger Tail's shoulders packed twice the muscle.
If I can just get my hands on him.
You're Badger Tail, aren't you?
Badger Tail? Are you joking? I came here to join Hail Cloud. Who are you?
Come closer. I want to see your face better.
As Badger Tail walked forward, his opponent stiffened and stared at him through terrified eyes.
You are Badger Tail. I saw you once. When I was a boy, you attacked my village.
A familiar ache swelled in Badger Tail's chest. There had been so many villages over the past 20 cycles.
Which village was that?
Bear Cub Village.
Badger Tail shook his head. He didn't remember that one at all. Not even the name cued his memory.
Do all of those deaths mean so little that I can't even recall their location? What's your name?
Flaxseed. But you wouldn't remember that. You just killed, pillaged, and ran, though your warriors lingered to rape my mother.
Supposing I really am Badger Tail, what are you going to do with me?
Flaxseed pulled back on his bowstring, and Badger Tail braced for the impact of the arrow. The muscles beneath his right nipple began to twitch with anticipation. 60 heartbeats passed, and Badger Tail shifted his weight to his other foot. Flaxseed stood like that, poised to shoot for what seemed an eternity, until sweat rolled down Badger Tail's neck.
Well?
Flaxseed lowered his bow.
No. I'd probably get in trouble for killing you. Most likely Hail Cloud wants to torture you for information. Just like he's doing with Locust.
Oh, Locust. Forgive me.
Turn around and walk. It's a good place to cross the creek a couple of thousand hands down.
Well, good. Since I'm not your infamous Badger Tail, I'll happily accept your escort into camp. Saves me from taking an arrow by mistake.